Welcome to the Sports Medicine Podcast, brought to you by the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology at Texas A&M University. At the Huffines Institute, we're always working to facilitate, apply, and bring you the most up-to-date coverage of the wide world that is sports medicine and human performance, all in a language you can understand and share with your friends. And now, here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Hello, and welcome to the weekly edition of the Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance podcast. I'm your host, Tim Lightfoot. And today we have a special podcast being brought to you in conjunction with the Texas A&M Coaching Academy. And it's our 150th podcast, and we're so pleased to have a special guest with us today, Coach Pat Henry.
Welcome to the podcast today, Coach.
Appreciate it.
Very much. So glad to have you.
You bet.
I'm going to tell the audience a little bit about you and why we have you here. First of all, it has been said of Coach Henry that he is the greatest track coach of all times. I think when you see this, you will understand why. He has a background from New Mexico, a bachelor's degree in physical education, a master's degree in educational administration from Western New Mexico. He's in his ninth season as a Texas A&M track coach. He has worked at a variety of levels as track coach. He is the first coach to ever lead a school to three consecutive men's and women's national championships in a row. Since he's been at A&M, he has seven NCAA outdoor championships and a total of 34 national track titles. Amazing. Amazing career. So it's quite an honor to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you very much. That's appreciated.
One of the things we always talk about is we always like our guests to tell us a little bit about how they got to where they are. Is this something you decided you wanted to do when you were like a third grade? You want to be the greatest track coach ever? Or
well, I don't know about the greatest. You know, that's you put that with it. But I'm from a family of coaches. You know, I think back today, I'm glad we weren't bricklayers, you know, because I think all of us would have been bricklayers. But grandfather coached, dad coached. I've got four other brothers that all coached. So we were afflicted with it a long time ago. And that was part, you know, you grow up in an athletic family and you think about the things you want to do. Although a lot of my family were football coaches. I was the one who decided to go the other direction. They were all track at one point, but a lot of football coaches in there too.
Yeah. So what attracted you to track and field?
Well, I like the individual aspect and the team aspect, and that's what's good about my sport is we're an individual sport, but we have a team score. And it's kind of the way I look at it from a philosophy of about how I coach the sport is it's about the individual. It's about the individual doing what he's capable of doing or she's capable of doing. And then at the end, they add up a score. And, you know, although I think I was on the same staff at LSU with Nick Saban, and, he and I talked about some things. And you know, football-wise, it's still about each guy doing what he's supposed to do. And if he does what he's supposed to do, then everybody's successful. And it's the same philosophy. You think football is all about the team, but it's an awful lot about the individual getting his job done too.
Yeah. Well, obviously, you've been incredibly successful, and there are a lot of other track coaches out there. What do you think that has made your programs more successful than others? Is it something you do? Is it a philosophy that you have? I know you talked about each person doing their job.
You know, I started, once again, out of a football family background, basically. But track, like, it attracted me, the individual part of it. But to coach a team and to try to establish who you are and what you are, that takes time. I was to high school for 10 years, junior college for 4, and LSU 17, and now this is 10th year here.
10th year, wow.
So over all of that period of time, I continued to change. But I think our athletes enjoy the aspect of I hire people as well who have a like philosophy about the sport. I think you have to have some continuity in your staff when it comes down to the overall outcome of your program. So I've been fortunate enough. At the high school level, you didn't get to really hire your staff. You know, they were either assistant football coaches or basketball coaches, and so
the ones that showed up.
The ones, although you know, in those years, and I was at Hobbs High School in New Mexico. It was a one high school town, and we were an athletic community. So, and they cared about everything. So I got to pick a little bit, but I still had guys that. Staff-wise, that you know, you had to indoctrinate yourself, but it's about the young people that you have being confident that you are, you know what you're doing. First of all, secondly, you're consistent with the way you treat them and the way you train. Those things are very, very important. And consistency is probably a key word for me in everything that we do. The young people coming into the program, they have to know that. You understand what it takes to get them to the next level, because there's always a next level. If there isn't a next level, then I don't want that person on my team. I try to recruit people, and even at high school level, you had people. If you didn't have people who aspired to be better all the time, then you had the wrong person out there. So you gotta have those people. You gotta change some people, you know, their thinking process about that, because. Many of them have never been told anything different than that, so that's what a coach is for, is to try to change the way you think about things. But I would say consistency is probably a key word in the development of my programs, and our athletes buy into what we're doing. They understand that we demand a lot, we expect a lot. They expect from us as well. And so when there's expectations going both directions, expectations for each other on the team, and you have to create that environment as well. Because if you only have a few that care and the rest don't care, or don't care as much, then there isn't an overall outcome that's going to be very good.
Yeah, that can cause problems, can't
that's
it?
Right. Yeah. But, I mean, you know, if you were running a business and you own a business, who are you going to hire? Who do you want working for you? And the people that you have working for you, do they want to build a business? Do they want the business to get better, or are they just there to get a paycheck?
Right.
So it's the same scenario.
It's like that's almost any organization, isn't it?
Anything you do.
Anything.
Anything.
So you've got 27 years at the collegiate level. What kind of changes have you seen? And I know track and field is made up of a lot of different individual sports.
Yeah.
So certainly, but what are kind of the overarching umbrella changes that you've seen in track and field over that time? Maybe things that have caused you to evolve your coaching philosophy.
Well, actually, it's 27, but it's those four at junior college were big college years too.
Yeah.
So over those 31 years to this point, of course, when we started coaching, the women's part of athletics was not anywhere close to what it is today. It wasn't even close. And so the development of females, the mentality and the physical changes that females have made has been the most dramatic thing that I have seen in my years of 40-plus years of coaching. The mentality change, how young ladies have been given the same opportunity men now, and how they've taken that and run with it.
And like the pun, that's a good pun, by the way.
That's exactly right. But I don't think people really understand how far female athletics has come. When you look at some of the things that happen in sport, and you relate it back to men 40 years ago and women today, women are doing things. In my sport, we're still not passing what men used to do, but we're getting closer and closer and closer. Swimming has had some passes, as we all know, not yet in athletics or track and field.
Yeah, and I know there are several articles that have compared the women's and the male records, world records, and variety of things, and it is amazing how over the last 40 years the women have made huge strides.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's still big strides being made for men, but big strides are centimeters and thousandths of a second, where on the women's side it's still inches and seconds.
Yeah. Just watched the Boston Marathon today, and the female that won, she cut almost 2 minutes off the course record.
Yeah.
Amazing performance.
You know, and the men are relatively stable. And I think, as you will you guys in your profession know, that one day, it may be a long time from now, one day women are going to run exactly the way men run, because training is caught up first. As we know, I think they use adipose, and they retain fluids a little bit better than men do. That's just genetically, they're a little bit better. In the long run, the things that I have read and looked at, and I think that women are going to have a little better machine to run for sure distance, maybe sooner than the sprints.
Yeah, they're doing that in ultra swims. Yeah. Like, some of the better ones are the women athletes in that.
Yeah, they're able to do some things men can't do.
Yeah. Has technology changed much? Has that played a role?
Well, you know, our sport is a lot of the places where a lot of things are tried. You know, you see football teams doing a lot of things track and field were doing many years ago, from flexibility to speed development into dynamics of stretching and flexibility, and or the lack of what we think of as flexibility. All of those things, I think, generate out of our sport for the most part, because we have a way of testing, we have a way of doing some things. But the sport continues to evolve. We learn more about what humans are capable of doing. I think that physically we know a lot about what the athlete can do, and we're learning more all the time. Mentally, though, we're way behind where we are physically, because the mental aspect of sport, I think we're touching on it. We're just getting a little bit better as we go, but it's not matching what we've done physically over the many years.
It's almost when you get to the edge of the physicality, that's where the mental state.
Yeah, the mental part of it. And I don't know that we'll ever get to the end of the physical part of it. So I know, I feel like mentally there's no telling what we're going to be able to do as time goes. You know, diets, supplements have all changed. Most diet has changed for the better. Many supplements have helped. But most of the supplements, of course, if you're eating correctly and you're doing things correctly in your diet, you don't really need the supplements people try to think that you need. You know, if you just eat right and eat your greens and do the things you're supposed to do, supplements just aren't that important. Now, there's a lot of cheaters out there that use some other things. and that has dramatically changed our sport, too. But our sport is pretty tough on it. You just can't, the science just can't, or the testing just can't stay ahead of the science yet.
Right.
You know, they're beating us still. They're still beating the testing systems. We're taking blood samples and we're catching people that have done things maybe 10 years ago. You know, that aspect of sport has changed sport a lot, in many ways for the worse. But I think that, I'll only speak for track and field. You know, if you get caught doing some of those things, you're done. And that's it. We don't have any second chances in our sport, and I wished other sports would do the same, but I fear that we're going the other direction, not the direction.
Becoming more lenient than anything.
Yeah, we're becoming more lenient than we are.
Yeah. Why is track and field, why didn't it have a bigger imprint in America's sports society? I mean, when we think about sport in America, we think about football and basketball, maybe baseball.
But
in Europe, track and field is huge.
Huge.
Yeah.
You know, America, we have a mentality of red beats blue. You know, you can't compare, it's hard to compare anyway, a good football team of today with a good football team of 10 years ago. You don't really know how to compare those people.
Right.
Our sport, you do. You've got a tape measure and a stopwatch.
Yeah.
So in that regard, I think track has hurt itself in many regards, because we have not worried about people sitting in the stands as we have worried about what the individual athlete is doing. We're a lot more pure about it. We want that individual to jump 7'7" in the high jump, where the general public doesn't know the difference between 6'7" and 7'7". Now that's a That's a big analogy. I mean, that's that analogy, but it goes throughout all of our sport. So it, part of it is track's fault. Track has not addressed the fact that unless you have people sitting in the stands, and you know, almost today, unless you're on TV, you're irrelevant.
Right.
I mean, you're not happening.
Right. No one knows you're happening. Right?
Nobody knows you're happening. Yeah. And we have got, and we're on a track back. We're trying to, and I'm at 62, and so I'm at a point in my career where I probably have, I'm trying to have another 6-8 years. And my push is, and it has been for a number of years, and there are a lot of coaches out there that are doing this right now. We have to get back to red beating blue. We have to get back to Texas A&M beating Houston, beating the University of Texas. We have to line up the sport and walk out of there knowing who won the track meet, not just knowing what the performances were,
right.
Knowing there's a team score and someone won. And we have to get back to that. And a lot of, you know, every meet we have here indoors scored. Somebody walks out of the building a winner and a loser. The other aspect that has hurt our sport, first of all, we went to metric, and that didn't help in the United States.
Yeah, because no one understands that.
Nobody. And, you know, 2.17 meters, I don't know what that is in the high jump unless I look it up what it is. You know, so that's not good.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a big push, and we do here, we show metric, but then we show feet and inches, and you have to do that. And once again, you can't get people in the stands. So the metric conversion, I think in the long run, has hurt our sport as well.
That's interesting. People know the mile, the 1,500 meters.
No, that's right. Yeah. And, you know, indoors this year, just talking about the mile,
yeah.
You know, 4 minutes is a huge, huge barrier. But there were 18 men that ran under 4 minutes this year indoors.
Wow.
Some guys didn't make the national championship because they couldn't run under 4 minutes in the mile.
Wow.
So it tells you how what's going on, but the general public doesn't know that.
That.
When you just said, wow, I think most people do know the metric mile. They know 100 yards. They don't know 100 meters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, that's hurt us. At the NCAA level, the thing that has hurt us, it's not intended to hurt us, but you always had a competition, but it was only one gender.
Hmm.
There was only one gender. Well, when gender equity went through, and you say no, you have to be fair across the board, so they combine men's and women's track is one event now. There's not two events, it's one event. So you made the length of our meet twice as long. So what was used to be a 3-hour track meet is now a 6-hour track meet. And very few people can sit in one spot for 6 hours.
It's hard to do that.
Or want to.
I have students that can't sit still for an hour and 20 minutes.
No, that's right.
Yeah.
And I don't want to go to a 6-hour track meet. I'm tasked with it all the time.
Yeah.
So if you combine both basketball programs and said you have to have a women's game and you couldn't leave till the men's game's over. I think there'd be less people sitting in the basketball arena also,
right.
You know, because so inherently the NCAA has caused us a big problem in our sport and don't even realize it. They really don't. I don't think they understand. No other gender has combined. Even swimming is separate.
Wow, great point. I had never even thought about that.
So
yeah.
The time frame has hurt us too. Those are all excuses. You know, we have 21 events, so really we have 42 events outside.
Mm.
That's tough to run in a time frame. If you run a dual meet with just us and someone else, it's still a long time frame.
Mm-hmm.
And running it as fast as you can run it. But probably the worst event in athletics today is a high school track meet. Because
really?
Oh yeah, because there'll be 90 schools show up at one site.
Oh.
And you have to go at 10 in the morning and you may not be out of there till 10 at night. So the parents come and watch their child run 100 and they leave. You know, well, you can't do that in other sports. That's just not the way it is. And we haven't addressed that and haven't understood that. And the reason it happens in high school, once again, it's a little bit of an excuse, but you've got to have about 100 officials to run off a track meet.
Mm.
And there aren't too many people that can organize 100 volunteer people to help run off a track meet.
And so while you got them there.
So while you got them there, everybody and their brother comes to one site.
Yeah.
And so our sport is, those are excuses. Those are reasons for, I think, some of the issues we have today. But they're legitimate,
right.
But they need to be addressed. We need more help from the NCAA addressing them. But
I know, like, for in the past year, NCAA has changed the scoring in tennis because of the same kind of reasons. I'm hoping that they get to the track and field. Yeah.
Yeah. We're a big, huge sport out there.
Mm.
Of all athletics in the NCAA, we're 33%.
Wow.
So for us to be pushed into a corner, and we're 33% of all competition, that's all sports combined,
yeah.
Men's and women's track and field, cross country, 33%, that's a huge amount of people.
Mm-hmm. And people talk about football being such big numbers, and they are big numbers, yeah. But compared to this,
that's right.
They're not.
That's right. People just don't know that. The other thing up here at the top, though, see, last year we took track. We made sure every competition we went to, mm-hmm. we knew. I don't think many people understand we competed in front of 208,000 paid spectators last
wow.
year. See, here at Texas A&M, we have a tremendous indoor facility. Hmm. One of the best there is.
It is beautiful.
Our outdoors may be the worst. It's the worst in the Southeastern Conference, and it was the worst in the Big 12. We can't even have a track meet here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we haven't won an indoor championship. We've won 7 outdoor championships. So the facility, that doesn't work the way most people think. You've got to have great facilities to win. But it has hurt us here at Texas A&M because we can't run an outdoor track meet. Baseball here has a game on Tuesdays. They have a game on Thursday. They have a game on Saturday. So people are in the rhythm of coming and watching. We have no way of establishing any rhythm of competition here. Indoors, we do a pretty good job.
Right.
But even there, we only have 5 competitions, unlike where they'll have, 50 here.
So in the spring season, when people want to get outdoors and maybe watch an athletic competition,
yeah. They can't watch
we don't have the venue yet.
And we're graduating a lot of people
mm-hmm.
in Texas A&M through our track program, and we are graduating some unhappy people with that.
And so for the audience listening, what Coach Henry has been referring to is a fact sheet, and we'll actually put that up, and that'll be on the show notes for this podcast. So help yourself to pull that down and look at it. It's really some fascinating statistics. And so you have the great, I guess, honor or privilege is you have one of the sports that has athletes that compete directly in the Olympics.
Yeah.
I mean, we of course, swimming.
Sometimes
does
a curse almost.
Oh, it's a curse, really?
Well, it's a great thing. It right. really is. But we're also put into a category that we're an Olympic sport.
Hmm.
We refer to as an Olympic sport. Well, Olympics only happens once every 4 years.
Yeah, right.
We're every year.
Right, that's right.
We're a college sport. But we have, from time to time, we do have Olympians on our teams. And the NCAA championships in our sport is probably the second best track meet ever, and
wow.
the Olympic Games being the only one that might be a little bit better in some things.
Well, and we come back to how Americans look at track and field, mm-hmm. and that seems to be when you get really interested in
yeah.
track and field is when the Olympics rolls around.
That's right.
And it's like national pride thing is on the line, and
yeah.
then they forget about it the rest of the time.
That's right. Like I will go back to our initial statement, mm-hmm. I think we've lost the team aspect of our sport.
Mm-hmm.
When you think of the Olympic Games, it is the United States against the world.
Right.
And so people can grab onto that. And they do. And we're not giving them that opportunity at the collegiate level until you get to the national championships. And then we don't have the crowd that's following us because they don't quite understand.
Right.
Although, there'll be 20,000 people at the national championships. It's still, to have a regular meet, you're not going to have those kinds of numbers. When we should. We
right.
should be able to do that.
Right.
When I was in college, when you were in college, I'd go to track meets on campus, and when I was participating, we'd have 12,000, 15,000 people at track meet.
Mm.
So we're an Olympic sport in that regard, but we're a collegiate team sport.
Because of the success you've had, you've drawn quite a few people to Bryan College Station. This really is almost an epicenter of track and field training, and some of your coaches are amongst the best in the world that you have, and You have many world champions that are back here training at various parts of the time.
Right.
That must be a really positive influence for you collegiate athletes as well, to be able to train against some of the world's best.
Well, the NCAA, yeah, that's right, and it is. And our people, of course, they know who our great athletes are.
Sure.
You actually cannot participate. I mean, we have a certain number of athletes that can actually train with our team.
Mm-hmm.
And those are ex-A&M for a period of time, and that's if they're a volunteer assistant. We're allowed 6 volunteer assistants. But I can't just let anybody come out here and train with us. Even if they're an Olympian, I can't let them come out here and train with us. So our numbers are really, yeah, the things that we can do. Now they can train at separate times.
Right.
And some of ours know they're there, and they get to watch every once in a while somebody do something. But, you know, the interaction is not what I would really like for it to be, but that's the rules.
And that's interesting. And I'd been told that in the past. It was interesting. I didn't realize that the NCAA limited the amount of interaction there could be between the professional track and field athletes and the amateur ones.
Yeah.
Are they afraid it might rub off or what?
Well, I think there's lots of issues. I mean, you know, the football team couldn't let all the guys who are playing pro football come back in there and lift and be around the football team either. So it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same for all sport.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting, especially when you've got people that would like to
with
you.
Yeah, I mean, if they were a great violinist,
mm-hmm.
no one had put those restraints on them coming back here and being around our violinists here at school or a great actor.
They would celebrate them.
That's right. And we only celebrate a very few and don't let the residents come around.
Right. Coach Henry, it's been great talking to you today.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you so much
for
your input today and,
you bet.
For everything that you've done for the university and continue to do. And
well, thank you. I worry about being a little bit negative, but in some areas I got to be a little bit negative about some things. But we're a positive program. We're fortunate to be here. We're blessed to have people that support us. We're working on a new facility, and that keeps me going. And we continue to recruit great young people to come here and represent Texas A&M.
We'll come back and interview you right before the new track and field stadium opens up.
That's good. I hope that isn't too long.
No, I hope not either. And what the audience can't see, I'm sitting here faced with this wall full of national championship trophies, which is pretty impressive. So I think after that, you have the right to say whatever you'd like about track and field.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. Appreciate and again, thank you for being with us.
You bet.
Thank all the listeners for taking the time to download and listen to us today. We hope that you join us next week and the weeks afterwards for the next 50 podcasts as we get to number 200 over the next 6 months or so. And until then, we hope you have an active and healthy week.
Thanks for listening to the Huffines Institute Weekly Sports Medicine Podcast. This podcast was produced by Kelly Selman and Aylin Letzinger and made possible by generous support from the Omar Smith family and the Sidney and J.L. Huffines family. This podcast is published under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. That means you can't sell it or change it, but feel free to give it to everyone you know and to talk and blog about us. And in case you were wondering, our opening and closing are provided by johnmilesproductions.com. Music was provided by Dave Zeltner. Find him on the web at davidzeltner.com. And just so you know, we love hearing from you. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.